It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, and away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Big thanks to Louie and the gang there. And my cohort, my partner, my friend, Mike Ward. How are you?
Doing good this morning. How about you, Sean?
Yeah, well, it's transition time.
That's what I was getting ready to say. I mean, this time of year, which way do you go?
Well,
do you go south or do you go north?
Where's your daydreaming going on right now?
I'm still south.
See, that's good. Mine's north.
Yeah.
Mine's, or at least, west. It is that time of year. We'll get into the hunting season's coming up. You know, I mean, next month we've got birds on the brain, brains for doves and teal.
We're going to talk about it, I think, 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's here.
So, yeah, we'll talk some about that on today's show. Obviously, we're going to talk about fishing. Yes, snapper's still open. I had a conversation with the director.
Trigger fish.
Yeah, all three, the trifecta, open.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of these things. It's just, we've talked about this so many times in fish management. There's fish management and there's people management. And that's what you're seeing here, because we talk about the allowable quota, and you know, we had some rough weather in June.
Did.
People didn't go as much. Then we got to go. There's a flurry there in July. And then, you know, heck, my kid's been back in school now for, I guess, a week and 2 days.
Well, so, not only that, you got all the kids that's playing ball.
Yep.
You know, a lot of, if they're playing school ball, they've been practicing.
We had tropical weather.
Yeah.
On top of
football
that.
Starting this week.
Right.
You know, high school football. So it's just a lot of stuff going on.
And yeah, there's fewer people.
And
fewer people going. Not saying there's nobody going, because there's definitely people going. But
yeah,
fewer people going snapper fishing,
bad.
So we're not going through the quota as quickly.
Yeah,
you know, that's just, and that's how, and that's good. And we'll keep our eye on it. We'll let you know when it's going to, you know, come close to coming through a close, but still, as of right now, snapper season's open, and like Mike pointed out, amberjack's back in, because often amberjack and trigger will come back in, but we've already run through our snapper quota. At this point, amberjack and trigger in, and snapper quota is still there.
Yeah. And so, the other issue, too, is fuel.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think twice about it. I can promise you that. I got three engines on the back of my boat.
Right.
And they like gas.
They're thirsty.
They love it. They don't just like it. They love it.
Right.
So, I mean, you think about it. I mean, you go out and go fishing for.
But none of the things we just talked about have anything to do with the fish.
Yeah, that's right.
Say, this is the people management of fishing.
That's right. So, I mean, it costs so much now to go out and catch a few fish with the gas prices going up and up and up and up. And so everybody's thinking about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, with all the things going on plus the gas prices, it's like, okay, we put the brakes on a little bit. And
then what people will do is choose their days. Like, I'm going to, you know, if you are going to put that much gas in the boat, I'm going to try to find a perfect day.
Absolutely.
You know,
not going out there
weekend,
with 3 foot seas.
Right. I'm going to find a perfect day.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go. So right now what we're getting to is snapper open, amberjack open, and trigger. So still reason to be offshore, and plenty of reason to be inshore. Talk to Captain Bobby this week. And I'm waiting for this report, just like when we talked to Captain Wayne Miller about Delta fishing last week.
Yeah.
I'm always waiting for these guides in August to say, well, it's not as good. Yeah, because sometimes,
so
they'll just
hot,
tell you, sometimes the guides just tell you it's not. And Bobby's like, yeah, we're whacking them. I'm like,
yeah.
It's August. It's second half of August. Yeah, we're whacking them.
Yeah.
So the trout fishing has been good. He said still early, the fish have been shallow. But that's lasts for a little bit, and then the fish pull back. But
By the time the sun comes up good, it's over with.
But then the bite in the deeper structure has been good. And he said, and bigger fish. He's real surprised. Not just numbers, bigger fish coming in. It almost sounds like we're talking about spring, but we're not. We're here in August. So hopefully that bodes well also for fall fishing. You know, thinking about rivers coming down and hopefully staying down some. We'll watch. I mean, we got some water in the Alabama Basin from whatever that last storm was.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, it was
Fred.
Fred,
my dad.
Right.
My
yeah,
dad. My dad's name's Fred. It's Fred.
Yeah, so yeah. Got some there, but not enough to wash everything out, so that part's good. All right, so we'll watch that. And by the way, too, that this is a transition here. Watch what I do. It's a pivot. I was seeing good signs of saltwater fish in the bay as I was gator scouting. So the saltwater was creeping up where it's been. Heck, saltwater's been pushed. I mean, it's like south of Dog River this summer. Now it's starting to creep back up.
Getting up around the causeway.
So that's good. Now, I haven't heard of any great – I mean, the redfishing stayed consistent, as you heard last week's show, way up the river, up to Dead Lake. Yeah. I mean, the redfishing – but I'm talking about trout. But not too far south of the causeway getting reports of trout right now. And the salt – you could just see the salt in the water, you know, and the fact it was getting a little more green instead of being like chocolate milk.
Yeah, the water's beautiful right
so
now.
Things are good. Yeah, so I spent last week. I know gator season's going on this weekend, but my people who have the tag are it was a one and done weekend. So
they're not coming back.
They're not coming back. Yeah. Put a lot of pressure on me. Said they were going to get it done this weekend or not, and it was or not.
Yeah, can you borrow their tag?
I wish, because and if I would have had it, I would have probably killed a gator the first night and been done with it. But you know, it's one of these things that. People are looking for a certain size gator.
Well, you know, took Chuck Sykes. Yes. Chuck Sykes is the head of the conservation department in Alabama.
Right. That's right.
And, you know, you did your best. I know you worked tirelessly trying to find them an alligator.
I ruined one engine.
That's right.
Messed up another boat and had a zert fitting blowout on a trailer on another boat. But we kept going because I had to have two boats.
Normal.
Yeah. I had to have two. So, yeah. So, I mean, we were thinking about it the other day. Probably put them in front of about 100 alligators in 3 nights. Did not see, and we're looking for some that were like some nuisance gators and some issues, and we're looking for some bigger ones. We were in the coastal zone, by the way. Let me say this, too.
South of the causeway.
Well, south of the Bayway.
Okay, the Bayway.
So anywhere in Mobile and Baldwin County south of I-10 is the coastal zone. So you could find one in a pond down in, you know, down in Grand Bay.
Right.
Right? I mean, in Grand Bay, like the city, not Grand Bay in the Delta.
Yeah.
You could find one in a pond and suburb, but we didn't have those. So, but it's anywhere south. So I was hunting the fringe of the bay. And there's some big gators there. And it's funny, I got somebody said, you know, big one just went by their house at Dolphin Island. Wish you could get down there and hunt it. And I said that. And I said that to the guys. I said, there's big gators that show up at Dolphin Island. I see them. There's big gators that show up at Bala Battery, show up at Weeks Bay, show up at Fish River, all these things. But they're less consistent. Than the Delta. The Delta, there's just a lot more places. There's just a lot more habitat. There's a lot more open water in this coastal zone.
There's residents there.
Right. Like, you'll see him, he'll be there, and then he won't, you know, versus, like, so, we ran a lot of gators. They were spooky. And, I don't know enough about gator hunting and gators to know why they're spookier sometimes than others, where they'll go down and stay down for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, instead of coming back up. And that's the game, right? You're finding, you're riding at night, you're shining, you're seeing eyes. Then you're going into the eyes and looking at that gator. And listen, a lot of times you're like, that's a 4-footer, keep going. That's a, you know, 5-footer, keep going. There's a lot, the population is good, lots of youngers. We did not see, I don't think I saw a double digit gator, like something bigger than 10 feet. I don't, maybe.
You think you saw a 10-footer?
I don't.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Eight, nine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of where we were at the top of the scale. And there was a 11-9 killed in Doe Leaf up there, Alligator Alley, where the boardwalk thing is and all that stuff.
Right.
Which I don't know. Side note, I saw, I don't know if it went anywhere, but a Facebook post where people were upset about it, and we're going to have a candlelight vigil for that alligator. Because they had, like, people see him from the walk or whatever, but that was a big gator. And that was one of the bigger ones I saw come in. I know some in the coastal zone. Yeah. But that's right on the edge of the coastal zone. So we hunted a lot of that stuff right – we spent a lot of time under I-10 at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to find some of those gators on the fringe, but just didn't find a big one. And then you get here, it's just like anything. It's almost like, you know, when you go on some hunting trip or something – where they always say, don't pass up something on the first day that you take on the last.
Yeah.
Because, well, some of that went on, too, that by the time we the last night, I mean, we put the boat on the trailer at 5:50 a.m. on that on Sunday morning.
All night.
All night, you know, to the last
minute. That's hard to do.
And waiting out a gator that was probably around 8.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just took that gator just played hide-and-seek with us for a while. We saw him, and then he went back to the grass. So you end up running out of time where you could have had chances, you know, to go after an 8-footer at other times, but you didn't. So there it is. Yeah, so we didn't, you know, imagine if they would come back, you know, tonight or something like that, we could go get on it, but that's it. That's the hunt.
They came down from Montgomery.
Yeah.
And
we had an armada. We had two boats worth. We had a follow boat. So I had
Which is a good thing.
Yeah. And so, like, I don't think my wife ever listens to the show, so I have small boats stashed all over. I got three of them, of the small boats. Yeah. And, yeah, the first night on the mud motor, so we had the mud motor boat, we have a gator tail boat, had the clutch go out in it.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, that was good. Thank God my other boat had a 16 Express.
So you had to get pulled in.
By my 16 Express. But yeah, I sat in my one boat. My other boat pulled me in. And then ended up by the rest of the hunt. We had I have a 13, big nod of the hat to Mike Lesarge, a 13-foot V-John, which is one of my babies. So brought that into the mix. So it followed the 16 Express. But then we didn't have the mud motor, and we were in situations where we needed – but. No kill. No kill. Lots of gators seen. No kill. Congratulations to those that killed some gators. Some people got real lucky. Like, we looked at one that was by a boat launch, you know, but it was a boat launch. How about this? Boat launch is south of the Bayway, but it's on the causeway. And there may be a restaurant right by it. So there had been an 8-footer hanging out there. And I think some people I know, I got to check it with them, killed that one. They said something to the effect of, we had scouts everywhere. We were looking for a gator. Bop, 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 bop. Couldn't find it. We launched that night, and 30 minutes later saw this gator and got it. You know? and there's
that the one that was following that kayak around that time?
probably.
Yeah.
So there it is. Population looks good. Did not see the great giant ones, but, you know, like I said, 100 alligators. For sure, in 3 nights. So
that's the way hunting goes. I mean, you go on a trip, and you've only got a certain time to do the job.
Right.
You don't do it every time.
There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, a lot of pressure.
Yeah. So I'm now
on you. I know it was.
So now I've had two successful people I've guided, and one person wasn't successful. Unfortunately for me, it's the director probably from Freshwater Fisheries. But all right, coming back, I may talk some more fishing. But I want to talk about planting too, because. Well, I like to talk about planting, but it's that time, Mike.
It is that time.
All right, be right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And you know, on the hunting front, too, and I'll look this up. Let's see. Either during the next news break or before we finish the show, they've added two new special opportunity areas, SOAs for the state. You know, we've talked about this before and just added to the mix here. So we've got a couple more in the state, one down here in our area, another one up closer to Montgomery. We'll talk about that and that process. If people still, there may be people who still don't know about the SOAs.
Right.
These are, so it's public land, but you get to hunt it by yourself, meaning that you go through a lottery process, you put in, and if you're drawn, you get great properties. A section. And like when I hunted Cedar Creek for turkeys 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we had, I think it was like 700 acres or something, 600. It was a lot of ground to turkey hunt. And if you're drawn, you're given those areas. So you're hunting. Yeah, it's public. It's open to any of us who, you know, in the state. But you got to, you know, if you get selected in the lottery, you get drawn in the lottery. But you hunt some prime stuff.
Yeah.
And most of it has been the ones that have gotten the biggest questions. I mean, the biggest talk about it have been up in the Black Belt. It's been like the Portland Landing piece, which if y'all like me and grew up watching the Mossy Oak videos and where they deer hunt, that's Portland Landing.
That's right.
And you get to hunt that. I hunted Cedar Creek, which is nearby. It's fantastic. But there's SOAs throughout the state. There's waterfowl ones in the north of the state as well, but now we got some down in our area. We'll talk more about that.
And the state buys land and then sets all this up. And I think they figured out how to get more money, because you got to buy a corn tag to put corn out. And if you're going to hunt hogs over
or coyotes at night.
Yeah, you got to have a license for that. So they figured out how to make some more money.
Yes.
They're doing good.
And that's and the here's the issue. These are properties also, just to go for a second here. These are properties. There's not a lot of, even though we don't have it anymore, Frank W. Boykins. Right? I mean, there's that big. There's not the Upper Delta and the W.L. Holland, you know, and the Mobile Tensaw, all those WMAs. Those are a little different because they were in land that probably wasn't timberland, except for Upper Delta. But they were areas that they could buy these big, huge tracts. There's not that many of those left.
No, there's not.
you know?
No.
And timber companies have gotten out, and they've split up their money, I mean, their land. They have sold off, or they still have some holdings, but there's private land in it. So it was just hard. So what they've done is found tracks. These are tracks. To me, they're big, but for a public area, you know, we're talking about 3,000 to 4,000 acres. I mean, big pieces of ground. But if it's something that was open to public hunting for the entire season, it would be like, we know what it's like. It wouldn't be that great.
Yeah.
Because it has so much pressure.
No.
Right?
You couldn't. It wouldn't be worth hunting.
Right? I mean,
not with the amount of people that would be wanting to hunt it, it wouldn't be worth hunting.
Right. Okay. And that, and by the way, so the new ad here, Thigpen Hill, SOA in Butler County. Okay. There's big bucks in Butler County.
Yeah.
Thigpen Hill, SOA in Butler County. That's come online. And the Blackwater SOA, now this is our neighborhood, Baldwin County, and this is not too far, I don't think, from like where the WMA is, or the Perdido WMA is. So, but this is,
I think it's south of it.
Yeah. So Blackwater SOA. Y'all check those out. They're up on the Outdoor Alabama. Just go to Outdoor Alabama, look for special opportunity areas. And then Cedar Creek that's been open, we've talked about before. And Crow Creek is the waterfowl one. Even though they have some deer hunting up there, I always look at it for waterfowl hunting because it's a really good duck area. Portland Landing, of course, like we talked about. Uchi Creek in Russell County. Over there, and they're not stopping yet. So they're acquiring some great properties. You know, you've got the Fred T. Stimson SOA too that has some different hunts on it. So, hey, put in for the lotteries. It's worth trying. You know,
great places to hunt.
Yeah, and you get top shelf. You got the best to hunt in our state offers for people who, you know, don't own land or aren't in a club.
And they're trying to grow big deer on these pieces,
big time.
Yes,
big time. So, and they're in places where you can grow.
Big
deer.
That's right.
So, yeah, and heck, on some of the other WMAs, you and I commented on it last year, and I'm going to spot burn this place, but I mean, it's on Holland's WMA.
Mm-hmm.
The bucks that came off that place last year, I saw the pictures on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
There's not a low fence club you could be in the Black Belt and have better deer than that coming off of it.
Not near as good.
I mean, really great deer on public land. So
yeah.
Hats off to the state for doing that. We'll continue to talk about those. And they have lotteries for lotteries for everything, like dove hunts and I think small game hunts. But you have archery lottery, you have gun lottery, and you have turkey. So, you know, that's all in the mix.
It's a lot of hunting.
Yep. So, yeah, look out there and find yourself a great hunt. All right. I mentioned also we'd talk some planting.
That time of year, it's time to go get your fields ready.
Yep.
You know, even though we're not going to plant probably till at least the middle of September to the end of September, 1st of October, it's time to go up if you're going to spray your fields,
mm-hmm.
bush hog your fields, whatever. Start getting things ready. If you till your fields up one time before you plant, it's just time to get up and get your fields ready.
That's one of the things I've kind of torn on the bush hogging right now, and that's with the fall and drop. Yeah, that's one thing that you know, and maybe so, you know, if you're going to bush hog, just, you know, your field, you may want to walk through them and take a look. I mean, if it's I tell you what, not that I won't be wrong, but if it's a quarter acre or eighth acre patch back in the woods at the scraggly grass, there's probably not a fallen lane in there.
Yeah.
But if you have 1 acre, 2 acre patches, 3 acre that are grown up head high and all that, y'all be careful.
Liable to have a fawn in it, you're right.
Be careful because they're drop, you know, this is fawn drop time. And so they could have, so, but spraying a lot of people are doing. So, yeah, a couple things. Like, I want to talk about this. So, as we're looking at getting ready for planting as well, and like you said, it's not that we're planting right now. That could be September through November
right.
if somebody's planting. But we've got things that are going to be happening. First thing I would say, and I'm pointing at myself, making myself do this probably tomorrow, is tractor maintenance.
Yeah. If you haven't already done it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, those things to be ready to go. How many times have you been, you know, maybe you haven't. You run with a better crowd than me. But how many times have I been there at a hunting club and it's time to go get everything done and now we spend half the day working on a tractor and there's no parts anywhere to get and it's Sunday and now
you got a flat tire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
Many times. Bearing just went out or.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's normal
to grease it. Well, but get that done before everybody's there looking at you, like, oh, are we getting ready to plant?
Yeah.
So get that stuff done. Spraying, you said that. And I do, you know, do a lot of spraying. And I want to talk about this as well, because I know that when we do this each year on the show, I get a lot of emails about this and a lot of talk. Heck, I've been on with Bill Finch on his show on Sundays and still get people asking about that. There's a lot of talk now about no-till.
Yeah.
It's real popular.
Right.
People looked at me cross-eyed, 8 years ago when I started talking about this, but now it's the thing. There's a lot of different versions of this. And so I just want to point that out. And you can watch the shows where they hunt the whitetails in the Midwest and all that. And if you have the right kind of soils and the right kind of equipment, you can approach it that way. And planting of cover crops, crimpers to lay it over, you know, and using a seed drill to plant. It's a thing to do. It's an expensive way to do it.
It is.
You got to have some, you got to buy some more iron, right?
That or you got to rent it. Either way, it's expensive. But if you have to buy it, you know, it's very expensive. You need a very large piece of property with big fields to buy that kind of equipment.
And like Mike said, you can rent it. And that's one thing to look at. Talk to local co-ops, you know. But one thing there is you got to when you rent it, you got to get it. You know, here's the thing, because there's going to be everybody's going to be like you.
Yeah.
For the next 3 months trying to get this thing, right, and get it dialed in. So not to say not to use, you know, not to use that equipment, not to use that technique, but just be mindful that if you buy it, it's expensive. You know, seed drills are – I've seen seed drills that are as much as a car.
Yeah.
You know?
They are very expensive. And, you know, the other thing is I've tried it on putting wheat and oats out.
Right.
And I didn't care for it.
You said you didn't like it because of the spacing, right?
The spacing, yeah. You know, we felt like we had to run over it two or three or four times to be able to get enough seed in the ground.
So because think about this. Seed drills, you're bringing up something. Seed drill is developed for ag, right?
For like putting corn out or putting soybeans out.
And you want that in rows for multiple reasons, you know, from herbicide application to harvest. Also, there's a spacing in ag to get the most out of each plant.
Yes.
Right, because you want that corn plant to grow to a certain height to be able to produce a certain size ear of corn, or the beans to do it.
And
you
if
want
all
that
spaced a half inch apart.
Right, they're all going to be so small.
That's right.
Right, that's because they're trying to get a soybean or a corn ear off that, or even a cotton boll. And some, we're not doing that as wildlife managers.
That's right.
Right? What we're doing is we don't have to have the oats get. They're not going to get full size. We're not going to have the wheat until later, maybe get full size. The brassicas get full. We're not doing that. But there's a danger, too, though, of overplanting and making everything puny, you know, or so there's an in-between. But, yeah, between the seed drill stuff, your point, and you said it last week, we were talking off air, you said, yeah, you didn't like it because of the spacing. That spacing is not good because that's not feeding deer in the wintertime. If you did that with small, you know, small cereal grains, they just walk right down the row and eat that.
That's right. They'd eat it up. It just didn't work out for grain.
So that is one of the, you know, one things about that technique. The other, like we said, it could be very expensive. So when we come back, we'll talk about a thing I do that is like the, you know, it's a poor man's version of that.
But it works.
It works great.
Super well.
It actually means, this is strange to say, less equipment than more equipment.
Yeah.
There's one of your pieces of equipment, if you do this correctly, you won't be using. Now, you may want to buy a culture packer, but we'll get to that when we come back. It's this throw and mow thing we get questions about every year, and we'll try to break it down as best I can when we get back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you here. Remember, check us out, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, where we'll post a link to the podcast of this show so you can share it. But we always got great stories coming up during the week. Leanna helps me on that as well. And so, and your pictures. We'd love to see those on there as well. So check us out, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Just make sure the outdoors is in the mix. And I know we're talking about planting, but during the commercial break, Mike and I were talking about native plants as well. And seeing some success with partridge peas on my place.
Now, I guess I'd never seen partridge peas. You had to pull it up and show it to me on the computer what it looked
yellow
like.
Yellow flower on it, kind of a fern. I say fern. That
it kind is
kind
of a fern-shaped fern
leaf.
Yeah.
Individual lobes versus one big leaf.
Yeah. And I didn't realize it flowered.
Yeah.
And then the seed drops out of the flower.
Yep.
And the turkeys and the dove eat it.
And the quail. Yeah.
The quail, yeah.
And what, you know, the other part of this is that it's got about 20% protein.
And the deer eat it.
The deer eat it. So, yeah. I'm finally getting some flowers, but it took a while because dang deer clip off every new growth, which is fantastic. It's a neat plant, and it's just called partridge pea, if you look at it. I don't say Sullivan found – like I'm the 1 millionth person to know about this.
I'm going to plant me about 200 pounds at my camp this weekend.
All right. Do you want to go ahead and call the bank first to get financing?
Why?
Because I think last time I checked, it was $9 a pound. Mike loves this story, so I if he's
yeah, you got to tell your story.
Okay. So I want to get last year. So last year, maybe in the early summer, spring. You know, I'm gonna get some partridge peas. Yeah. I'm gonna do this, and I want to plant it.
I've kind of investigated lower density ponds.
And I wanted to have it mixed in with, for quail cover because I work on quail populations as much as anything on our place. So I'm gonna get this, and all right. So I call Lee Davis at G&D.
Mm-hmm.
Lee's listening. Good morning.
Yep.
I called Lee and I said, tell you what, let me get a. I said, what's that partridge pea come in? He said, I don't know. I said, well, give me a 25-pound bag, or if you got a 50. Let me get 50 pounds for something. He said, let me keep talking a little bit. And he said, let me check something here, Sean. And he picks the phone back up. He said, that's $9 and 20-something cents a pound, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I said, did I say 25? How about 3 pounds?
Yeah.
About 3 pounds. It's a native seed. Native seeds are so expensive. If you look at the native seed blends, if you look at those online, that this mix of trying to restore native grasses and all this, a sack is $700 because there's no mechanical harvesting. They got to harvest by hand or with these like a vacuum cleaner thing and all that to get these seeds. But yeah, that partridge pea. So I planted the 3 pounds. I think I could afford.
But three pounds, tiny. It's like a turnip seed.
Yes,
really small.
Smaller than clover seed.
Yes,
I mean they're. And
so it goes a very long ways.
Although.
It depends on how you set your spreader.
Yeah, and I use a little hand spreader. I did spill some one time when I was doing it, and I ended up sitting there digging up the dirt and sifting it out. This stuff was – but so it really didn't do much last year. I'm just going to say this. I don't know if it'd be for everybody, but it didn't do too much last year. But in the areas that got reburned, with my control burns this year and some stripped, it did quite good. And
awesome.
It is neat, though, because 20% you can – and I want it to spread more and more. I'm trying to get it to spread because it's 20% protein. I mean, now we're talking about if I could have something, as much as I've worked on beans over the years, if I had something that was perennial that provided that kind of protein, like partridge peas, I didn't have to go back. All I had to burn it or just disc through it or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd rather have that. Nothing against beans. Bean fields are great. But, I mean, I'm a one-man show, Actually, I get a lot of help from a guy. But it's a great move if you can get it to spread. So it feeds those deer while they're building antlers. And like you said, those seeds drop and the turkeys and the quail. And I guess if it was cleared there, the dove would like it too. But it's usually, I have it kind of in a bushier area. But, yeah, partridge pea is one of them. Ragweed. Ragweed has around 20% protein as well.
I did not realize that either. I mean, most people I know want to get rid of ragweed.
Right, right. Yeah. But that's the one thing. This is not some kind of – anti-soybeans, because Lord knows I've talked enough about soybeans and growing soybeans on this show, but the ragweed, I mean, if I could have something that's perennial there, that I don't have to do it, it just gets it done on its own and provides 20% protein, it's a lot more time to do other things than planting a bean field and worried about it.
Well, not only that, you have to have the acreage to plant beans too.
Yeah, you got
to
be
you can't go
seven, 8 acres before you even start with beans.
10 or 12 or 20. You can't just go plant an acre of soybeans in a green field. That ain't going to work.
So just look at it and kind of study. I mean, not everybody does, but study your plant books and see maybe what you have on your deer club or whatever. Maybe maybe you got some of the stuff you need. You know, you're going to go in there, it's like, oh, we're going to put this in iron clay piece. We're going to put this in soybeans. And maybe, I'm not saying, because a lot of times it's not, but maybe you're mowing down things that could provide that protein without, and you could just let them be all summer, then come in and do something in the wintertime. All right. We mentioned this throw and mow thing because we get a lot of questions every year. We kind of went through the seed drill and the kind of other idea. Not saying that's bad. It's just not kind of what I do. And like Mike said, if you're trying to grow cool season, you know, grasses
you're
and stuff.
You're doing corn, you're doing beans, something like that. It's good. The drill does great.
And they have drills that will plant these small seeds.
Oh, yes.
But is it trying to use, I'm going to shoot a, 375 Rigby at the deer. It'll kill the deer, but it's maybe more than I need. Maybe that 243 will get it done. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that kind of, so, and you mentioned this with planting and spraying. So this time of year, if you're going to do this, let's say if I catch you before you start it, because a lot of times people are like, oh, I wish I'd heard
too
this
late.
Show early. All right.
Yep.
Here's what I'm doing right now. In any field that I have that the grass is gotten real tall, and I talked about this thing. I know fawns are on the ground. I'm thinking about it. I set a bush hog high. I'm not trying to bush hog. All I'm trying to do is make sure that grass is low enough that I can spray over it.
Yeah.
And it depends on how high your sprayer is.
6 or 8 foot tall.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's all. And that's just because I don't want that stuff dripping on me. And I want my sprayer, if your sprayer, if you got 12 foot of spray on both sides, but it's spraying into grasses that are 7 feet tall, you're not doing it. Right. So the only thing if I'm doing any bush hogging right now, it's just to make sure that I can ride through there on a UTV, right, with the sprayer, and it's higher than the grass so I can get the normal spread.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. So I'm going to kill that grass in the field. So that's what I'm doing right now. That's an August thing. That's a September thing. I'm going to be riding and spraying and killing that. That's now looking forward to your next step. Down that field, 10 days from now or whatever, you got it dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's dead. And most likely this time of year, it's not going to come back on a second growth, what they call a ratoon crop or, second. It's dead and it's going to be that way. Then when you come in and it's time to plant, you figure out, you look at weather. I still do. You hopefully have rain coming. But what I'm not doing here, y'all, we're taking out a step. We're not disking. Okay.
That's right.
We're spraying that grass, got that grass dead. And then on the day we plant, coming in just like picture, like you had a disc field. But look at that dead grass field the same way as a disc field. You're going to go through there with your hopper, and you're going to spread your fertilizer, if you add lime that time of year, and your seeds, right? You're going to put that at the, I'd say, normal ratio, or actually, I'd probably up it by about 20%,
Yeah.
Because out of the things that cost me money, seed, 20% more seed is not the big cost.
That's the cheapest thing you're going to do.
Normally if you got your little notepad for your hunting club and say, we put 2 bags of wheat and 1 bag of oats and 1 bag of clover, whatever, on the thing, maybe plus it up by 20%.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to go and you're going to go through and you're going to spread that through the field. Now, that those seeds and fertilizer and all that's going to go down through the grass, right? And we'll solve the problem in a second if you think, oh, well, some of it's going to get hung up on a leaf or whatever, but just spread it out there. Now you've got your fertilizer and seed in there. All right, that's it. You can go, that person can go to the next field and do it. Spread it. Person behind them, bush hog. And you're going to come through with the bush hog. Before I get corrected by some folks in the tractor, a rotary mower.
Yeah.
Come run through. So you run through with your rotary mower. And you drop it. You can drop it pretty low. I like to drop it low.
Drop it as low as you,
that's
want
right.
to.
Yeah,
all the way to just about the ground.
That's
almost.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing then is I'm mowing all that stuff that we killed is standing. That dead grass. I'm mowing it down. In that process, also, I'm shaking any of that fertilizer and seed that didn't make it the whole way to the ground is now shaken down to the ground when that thing comes over it. Right.
Right.
So it shakes it to the ground, and I'm leaving over it. That grass on purpose, because you'll say, well, there ain't going to get any sun. Exactly, because a seed, by its nature, is what God has given that plant to get it up to the sun. That's why there's nutrition in there. That energy is so that plant can get up to see the sun.
Right.
And I've laid a blanket of grasses over it. What that does also, we know how, even though we've had a wet year, it could all of a sudden, dang October, whatever, turn off and not rain for 3 weeks. Well,
that's right.
when you disc and do all that, you expose that soil, it loses the moisture, and then you're absolutely dependent on getting tons of rain to make it happen until the winter rains get here. Well, this way, you have like a greenhouse over it of this grassland there. Those seeds are down there. They've got the moisture. They put their foot down, like to anchor themselves, and they come on up. And those blades of grass or those clover leaves or whatever, they come up through that thatch.
That's right.
Now they've got the sun. But they also have more moisture below. Now, that's the idea of getting it done on year one. The reasoning behind this is, number one, it's easier. It saves disc and time. More moisture in the soil. But you also do this. If you got your green field there at the camp and you look at the dirt there, take a fistful of dirt after you disc it up, then walk out there in the woods, you know, 5-10 yards out of the field,
right,
and dig you up, push pine straw back and dig you up the dirt. You got something that looks like sand, you know,
in the field.
In the field, and something that looks like potting soil, you know, like you planted mama's flowers in out in the woods. Well, why is that? It's because that's been breaking down with all these nutrients and creating topsoil. That's what you do long term. So the short term benefit on this and the long term benefit, I call it THROMO. We'll talk more about this when we get back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. By the way, as Mike and I were just talking there during the news break, yeah, I said $9 earlier. I don't think it was 30. We just see some, we're talking about partridge peas from earlier, how much a pound. But yeah, it was somewhere between 9 and 30.
Yeah,
I know it was enough that when I was talking to Lee.
Pounds or $25 a pound.
That might have been it. When he and I were talking, I had talked this big game about how much I was going to buy, and he told me, I'll get 3 pounds.
Yeah.
Those partridge peas. All right, and continuing here before we wrap up, and we will talk about this going forward, but this idea of throw and mow. There, you've heard of throw and grow. There's all these there's other terms. Throw and grow is often like where people just throw stuff out on the ground.
Yeah.
Okay? This isn't throwing stuff out on the ground, but it's not disking. And that's the thing. Believe me, I'm first generation off the farm. I like to see stuff disked, that whole process, but you're going to – you're ruining your soil.
Yeah, you are.
And if you're like me, the places I hunt, I don't have good soil. Now, black belt dirt or in the Mississippi Delta or something, you can get away with this for a long time of disking and disking and disking. But you got marginal soils like a lot of us do. If you're in Piney Woods in Alabama, you got marginal soils.
Yeah, you do. And you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
And I've seen the videos and the pictures of one field that was mow and grow.
Yeah.
I guess you say mow and grow.
Well, I'll say, throw and mow.
Okay. And then the other picture where you disc it up, put the seed out, and actually the throw and grow,
mow and grow.
Okay.
That thing.
It looked as good, if not better, than the other side.
Right.
Yeah, so it works, and it works great.
Now, I tell you where it wouldn't work. Like, if you have big seeds, because let's talk about what it doesn't do.
Yeah.
Like, I would never say somebody do this for beans or corn or anything like that. But think about the size seeds we throw for winter deer patches. What's the biggest one we throw?
Yeah, oat.
Maybe.
Wheat.
Yeah, oat or wheat. That'd be the big.
I mean,
everything else, and they're not big, and everything else is smaller.
Yeah.
Right? You talk about a brassica, or you talk about clovers. I mean, we're talking about tiny seeds.
Turnips.
Yeah, you know, and so when you say, well, it's got to have seed-to-soil contact, believe me, it's getting it.
That's right.
Down there.
All it needs is a little moisture, and that seed's going to pop up, and those roots are going to come out, and it's going to find
that dirt. Right, because remember, we threw it. We did the throw with the hopper into that field that we had terminated with glyphosate, like we'd sprayed it and killed it, right? And it's sitting there, and here goes fertilizer and seed into the field as you ride through, and it's bouncing around. The stuff that didn't get to the dirt in the first place, when you go over it with the bush hog, which is your next step, the rotary mower, your next step, it's going to push all the rest of that, shake it down to the ground. And you're laying that grass right on top of it, which, like Mike said, that keeps that moisture in there.
Yep.
And then seeds go to doing what they're going to do and getting themselves up to the sun and start growing. So it takes out the disking, and it also, over time, and it's not like for your grandchildren. I mean, it's stuff you'll see in, you know, a couple years' time. All of a sudden, you start off with white sand or sandy loam or gray-looking soil. Now it's brown soil. Now it's brown with a little bit of black in it. You know, you're building soil just like if you walked out into the woods near your field and dug it up, that soil is a lot richer. Well, that's what you're doing here. And you could even accelerate that. After you do it the first year, you can accelerate that process. One of them would be early on, let's say, depends on our rain and all that, but like in June. Like I did this on some fields I'm trying to rebuild that had dozer work done on it. Those are real tough.
Yeah.
Because a dozer goes through there, and I had some patches expanded and all that. But after that dozer goes through there, man, your topsoil is gone. You're dealing with – it's tough to get stuff to grow there. But I'd go through and mow. The same way you mow in your yard, I don't bag. I mulch when I mow my yard because I'm putting the stuff back in it.
Soil up, yeah.
You can do that in your fields too to build it up. But you do want to let it get some growth on it before this time of year because you're going to use that grass to cover up all those little seeds.
Yeah.
And what I mentioned is that this is less equipment than normal because we've left the disc out. I hadn't mentioned a disc, you know, not discing it at all. I would say if you wanted to buy, you felt like you needed to buy something, which I understand what that's like with farm equipment, feeling like you have to buy something, Colts Packer could just press those seeds in a little bit more. So, you know, you could go through there with the Bush Hog and then run through with the Colts Packer over that if you want to press them more. But I've had fields too. I've had fields that I cultipacked, and then it came a rain, or it came late a Sunday night, or whatever, and I couldn't do the other ones. And heck,
It won't make any difference on that. Don't believe.
Yeah, it really hadn't.
I mean, if you've disced the field up and you got big dirt clods out there and that kind of stuff, and you take the cultipacker and smooth
a different
all that
thing,
out,
yeah, for disking
and putting the dirt on top of the seed a little bit, that'll make a difference. And but what that does, that packs that dirt, and it maintains the moisture.
Right.
Which you've already got the moisture
right
there.
You don't have to try to save the moisture.
You haven't done that. So when all those leaves and grass and stuff gets on top of that seed, and we have some good dew or whatever, all that's going to create moisture up under those, and it's going to grow.
And it will save, and so you're creating soil, but like Mike just said too, that you can get through when other people don't. And I've proven this. When we'll have a dry, you know, and October's our driest month of the year, but some years we have a wetter September and come in with a lot of rain. Sometimes we don't. I can get through if I've had a couple rains to get that stuff started, right, and doing okay. Those dews you're talking about, you know, that soak your pant leg up to your knee kind of when you're walking through, those dews out there will absolutely water that stuff to get it through to the next rain.
Yeah.
It's really something.
But if it don't have anything to cling to down there.
Right. Well, if it's a disc field.
If it's disc field.
It's not going to. You're going to have no dew.
10 o'clock, it's gone.
It's gone. And you're really not going to have much dew anyway because the dew is going to be forming, you know, on that thatch layer, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you do what we're talking about, it forms on that thatch layer. And then some of it, before it can evaporate, is dripping
down up under it.
So just an idea, and I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it in August because often I screw up and I wait till September, October. So if you want to do this, or one of the things too, people ask me about it all the time, can we do this? If you're at a club, I get it, and not everybody's on board with this. Say, y'all, let's try this on the whatever patch. We'll do one or two patches this year this way, right? And
just
see
it.
And you see, and then if you don't like it, you're fine. But
you
can say, hey, we're not going to have to disc. You know, that's one less thing we have to do on this one. And so give it a shot. See if you like it. You know, but one thing you got to have, you can't have if you have a patch that really doesn't have anything growing in it, you don't have any grass really growing in it or didn't do, that means another problem. You got another problem if that's the situation.
You got to have something
to lay
over.
But you got to have something to lay over it. Right.
Yes.
So don't say, well, I came and spread the stuff and then I bush hogged over it. If you have a stem here and a stem there of grass, it's not going to do anything. It needs to look, it's a mat of grass over when you're finished. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll pick this back up next week.
We'll be here.
All right. Y'all have a good time out there, and we'll do it again next week. This is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Prep Sports Report, all the way next.